Listen on Demand, brought to you by 680 News.
Walter Koenig, hello.
Hi, Gloria. Nice to hear your voice.
And what an exciting thrill to hear yours, and an honor and a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Thank you.
And first of all, right off, congratulations on your film. This is your first feature film, is that correct?
Well, this is the first feature film that I wrote and was executive producer on that got made. So, yeah, in that regard, certainly it's the first film, yeah.
I hear you on that. Not easy this day to put financing in place and juggle all the balls you have to get in the air to actually get it made.
Yeah, indeed. That's, you know, I don't think people really understand just how hard it is, particularly when you're doing it on your own and you're making an independent film.
Absolutely.
It took us 10 years to get this done, but it was all worth it. I'm very pleased with the result, and I had such a spectacular cast to work with and staff that it was a very pleasurable experience.
Excellent. Now, when did you write it? Had you written it 10 years ago, or is it more recent?
No, I wrote it about 9-10 years ago. And at that juncture, my intention was to play the lead role. But, you know, the passage of time ravages us in one way or another, and I discovered that it was no longer appropriate for me to be... I'm not sure it was ever appropriate for me to be a leading man, but certainly not at this stage. So I decided to do the second lead, the second role, the antagonist.
You get to play the bad guy, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, it is always fun. It's always fun, and we got Richard Hatch, who was just wonderful in the role of Eric, our main character. He's just a terrific actor, and he did a brilliant job.
Yes, indeed, and the story. I mean, it's a sci-fi story, but I sort of feel it's almost in the tradition of Gene Roddenberry. There's a very special message there as well.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Somebody else mentioned that, and I'm pleased that people see that. Yeah, we were, you know, it's important to me. I'm not of a mindset to think in terms of, and I don't put it down because, you know, money is important, but it's, you know, there are stories that are strictly exploitation stories, and people go to them for the thrills, and that pretty much is the beginning and the end of what they're going to have happen. I certainly hope that the story. You know, is stimulating intellectually, and not to say that it's a dull treatise, a dull academic treatise. Because it certainly isn't that. It's an adventure, and it's a very touching and heartbreaking story. I think about a man coming to grips with his own tragic past and with this opportunity to make things right with the birth of this alien child that he has his DNA. So, and the consequences of that follow. How the government tries to take it away, going on the idea that what you don't understand, you fear, and what you fear, you hate. And so he has to contend with the whole government procedure of trying to. Take it from him.
Yeah, there's a lot of themes going on in there of I don't want to hesitate to say good versus evil, but sort of opposing forces, shall we say?
Yeah. You know, we touch on things like civil rights and human rights, and we talk about habeas corpus a little bit. I mean, it's all part of the story. And so, yeah, I mean, I was, you know, when you mentioned the Star Trek, one of the great virtues of Star Trek were the best stories. Had a topical reference. You know, they addressed socio-political conditions at the time, and even though they took place in the future. And in some small way, I hope that I've been able to do that as well.
I think you have. And you also cast somebody from the Star Trek alumnus as well, Marina Sirtis.
Oh, she's brilliant. She's absolutely brilliant. She plays the government attorney, and she's really powerful. But everybody in the cast, they're all good, and they're all... you know, in some way, connected to the sci-fi genre. Gary Graham, Eric Avari from who was on Hero, all down the line, these folks have made their mark in that particular genre as well as elsewhere. And I've also my wife is in it. Judy Levitt, she plays the judge, and my son plays one of the pivotal bad guys in it, Andrew Koenig, and my daughter, who was 8 months pregnant at the time, and is a stand-up comedian, She played a stand-up comedian who was 8 months pregnant at the time, and she wrote her own monologue that is involved with giving birth in the film.
Fantastic! I didn't realize she was your daughter. Isn't that great?
Yes, it is indeed.
Now, it must be a little unusual to have a daughter that's a stand-up comedian. Do you find yourself the subject of a few barbs now and again?
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, the first couple of times I was a little shocked. But, you know, I got used to it and taking it with a good nature. We've got her name is Danielle Koenig, and we have a really good relationship. So she feels, I think a tribute to that good relationship is the fact that she can kid about it. And I'm rather proud of the fact that she can do that.
That's great. It sounds like you have a good relationship. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And now, what do you think of the fact that Star Trek is continuing? They just made a new movie. I mean, this thing just keeps going. Why does it keep going?
That's the question that's probably been asked more than any other, and I think everybody has their own take on it. I used to say that the writing was literate, and they had culled their writers from the genre itself. They had gotten really good science fiction writers. The acting was always, I thought, quite honest and believable. We were making salient, trenchant statements that people could relate to, and we piqued imagination. People never get tired of fantastical stories where they can be transported and taken away from the mundane, everyday kind of life. So all those things. But, you know, there are other films that have done that and other TV series that have done that, and why Star Trek seems to remain the flagship for all of them, it's kind of a mystical combination of things. You know, all those things put together, I guess, in some way becomes a sum that's greater than the parts.
Exactly. Well, I think a large part of it too, for me anyway, and I mean I grew up with Star Trek, I'm a huge fan, I think it was the characters. I think the actors made the characters so real and the acting was so good. I mean, all of you stayed with us.
Yeah, well, thank you, and I certainly tend to agree with that. I'm particularly strongly about the Leonard Nimoy as Spock. I think my candid appraisal is that there are probably several hundred actors in Hollywood for each of our roles, and could have done, if not the same way, would could have done as good a job in their own interpretation of these characters. But I think Leonard's take on Spock was unique. And even though I thought the gentleman who plays him in the new movie is very, very good, Leonard S. Spock was really quite extraordinary, and I think really was the force that carried the series, at least the series, during those days in the 60s.
Absolutely. Well, he's a wonderful actor, too, yes. What's your fondest memory of the whole Star Trek series?
Oh, fondest memory. I don't know. I guess it's generally being associated with a show that had some dignity and which I could take pride in. The acting challenges were never that extraordinary. But I was pleased that I was identified and that I could identify with a project that. Believe the way I believe, and was trying to make a difference in terms of people's understanding of the world and the good things as well as the bad things that go on in it.
Absolutely. Getting back to Inalienable for a moment, the title. Explain the title.
Well, it works on two levels. We do, in fact, have an alien child that our protagonist gives birth to and becomes his son. And it also has to do with inalienable rights, the fact that we but we broached the question, does this creature that has his DNA but looks very unlike human beings, does this creature have, you know, human rights? Does it have civil rights? Is it accorded the same rights under the law that human beings are accorded? So it works on both levels. And in fact, the government, it becomes the antagonist in the film, and they try to take it away from him. So it has a science fiction springboard, departure point, but it's very much, I think, a love story and a human interest story.
Excellent. Now, I read that it was the first feature film to be released on the Internet. Is that right?
Yeah. For pay. It was the first feature film that was charged. Yeah. And we got a good response. It just wasn't a large number of response. We felt that, you know, if we got a DVD release and through a reputable company, and Anchor Bay certainly is that we would bring more attention to the film and more people would become aware of it.
Absolutely, great. Yeah, it looks nice, and the packaging looks fabulous too. Beautiful.
Yes, it's beautifully. It's beautifully packaged. I think it's a collector's item just in terms of the cover. And I think it's also going to be an underground film that will endure over the course of, you know, a long time.
Yep, absolutely. Before we sign off, Walter, tell me a little bit about your charity work in Burma. I was reading you've done quite a bit of that.
Well, I was asked if I would go to the Burma border, Thailand-Burma border, and visit the refugee camps, and then hold an international press conference and to discuss and make the world slightly more aware of the atrocities that were taking place in Burma at the time. Burma's gotten a lot more recognition, and there's a lot more public awareness now than there was at that point. That was about two and a half years ago that I went. But it was really an eye-opener for me. The Burmese government is really a reprehensible organization. They have no respect for their people. They're really performing acts of genocide on their own people. You know, Burma is made up of several states, and the ethnic quality of these states is in some cases different from others, and they're trying to level the field and purify the blood. Now, if that sounds chillingly familiar, you can take that analogy because it is appropriate. They conscript children as young as 11 and 12 into their armed services and teach them to fire guns at their own people. Rape is an accepted form of behavior. Mm. In the country. I mean, it's a sanctioned form of behavior in the country. A million people have had to leave their homes, leave their villages because of the intrusion of the government, and landmines are as commonplace almost as rocks. And when I visited the camp, I visited the clinic, and I saw the damage that had been done, the limbs that had been lost, people who had done nothing more than try to live their lives quietly and you know, in their own community.
Wow.
Sorry to interrupt.
Okay. Walter, how lucky are we to live on this side of the world?
Yes, indeed. It's absolutely true, and we should be thankful for it every day of our lives.
Absolutely. Sir, a pleasure to talk to you, and congratulations on your feature film.
Thank you, Gloria.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.